owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Welcome to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. My wife, Laura, holds the unofficial title of executive producer and vice president of guest recruitment for American Warrior Radio. It's a rare evening when she doesn't have a guest or a topic idea for the show. A common and reoccurring theme is, you know, you really need to have more women on the show. Now, I've only been married a year, and the alert frequency on my mansplaining avoidance system is set to ultra-sensitive. We have had some outstanding female guests on American Warrior Radio already. Muriel Engelman, the World War II nurse who endured the Battle of the Bulge, Gold Star mother Scotty DeMage and Marsha Moon, author Catherine Atwood, who's written several outstanding books about women heroes of World War II and Vietnam, Colonel Brenda Carter, the first female air commando senior leader, Captain Chrissy Weiss, an Air Force pilot who returned to the cockpit despite losing a leg, and world-renowned combat photographer Stacy Pearsall, just to name a few, but there goes my mansplaining alert again. There's also a practical reason. Women represent just 16% of our enlisted forces and 18% of our officer corps. Their participation is trending in the right direction. Those numbers were only 2% and 8% respectively when the draft ended in 1973. Here at American Warrior Radio, we're committed to telling the stories of all those who stand up and take the oath, male or female, as long as it's a good story, and will further explain and help the understanding of the 99% of those of us who never served. Today, thanks to our friends at Bravo 748 Military and Combat Speakers Bureau, we have one such person who just happens to be female, and an Army veteran, and a wrestler. Yep, a world-class wrestler. Sally Roberts is a combat veteran, a two-time world bronze medalist in women's wrestling, and the founder of Wrestle Like a Girl, an organization with the mission of empowering women and girls through the sport of wrestling to become leaders in life. Sally, if you're hopefully we've got you, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Hello. Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem. I'm looking forward to this, and you're going to get me out of hock with my wife.
Excellent.
Winners all around. Now, Sally, you grew up straight-A student, active in the Girl Scouts, lots of volunteer work with your church, helping puppies and kittens. You were an ideal young lady, weren't you?
Absolutely. I absolutely was. You know, it's funny because my life was anything but that, and I found some really creative ways to be successful. Growing up, I had a really challenging home life. I would go out after school. I was shoplifting. I was breaking into houses. I got into so much trouble that the authorities started getting called. I got arrested so many times that I finally got put in front of the system. And they said, if you don't find an after-school activity to keep you engaged, you're going to find yourself in juvenile detention. I looked at the list of activities. I tried out for all the girls' sports, softball, basketball, volleyball, and I got cut from all of them. They said that I was unathletic, but the reality of it was that I didn't know how to play well with others. I only knew how to fight. I knew how to be aggressive. So when I started looking at the list of alternatives, like the other activities, I saw that wrestling was a no-cut sport, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's it. As long as I go out for wrestling and I don't quit, that means that I'm most likely not going to go to juvenile detention. And that's exactly what happened. Wrestling kept me engaged throughout my years of high school, all the way through junior high and high school, and it really changed the trajectory of my life.
Now, Sally, I'm no expert, clearly, but that's somewhat of a late start in life for someone who is going to end up wrestling at the Olympic level. So, I mean, clearly you've got athletic talent.
Well, I think that wrestling is a fairly cool sport in that, you know, as long as you came out there and you tried really hard and you fought, I mean, you know, anyone has a chance at being successful. And the truth is, all the way through junior high, all the way through high school, I was the only girl at that time that wrestled on the all-boys team. I didn't win. In fact, I only won one match all the way through my whole entire junior high and high school career. But I loved what I did so much. And it set off this chain reaction of teaching me what I was really capable of. If I really tried my best, I showed up every day. I really honored the skills of wrestling that, that the sport imparted, which is grit, tenacity, perseverance. And at the end of my high school career, I was the, I'm the youngest in my family and the first one to graduate high school. I got a scholarship to go and wrestle at a university. And at that point in time, my family life had become even more fractured, and my mother and father, they divorced. I was living in my car. And when I got a scholarship to go and wrestle at the University of Minnesota Morris, which at that time was the very first college in the United States to have women's wrestling, I took it because it gave me dorm room residence. That meant I wasn't going to be homeless sleeping in my car, and that's why I went to college. So wrestling in all of these incredible ways, really, it gave me opportunities. And I can even say, like, yeah, it saved my life, because who knows where I would have been without it.
Sure. Now, was that after Minnesota, is that how you got involved in the Olympic program? You spent quite a bit of time at the training center, the Olympic training center there in Colorado Springs, correct?
Yes. So the way that it worked was that I went to school at the University of Minnesota Morris for 2 years. And while I was there, I had a bit of a culture shock. I came from Seattle. I moved to Minnesota. I was surrounded by 200,000 acres of farmland that they were harvesting the corn. It smelled like ethanol. There was a few different reasons why I didn't love it. So I started looking around at different places that I could go and wrestle in college. At that time, Pacific University in Forest Grove, Oregon, they were starting a women's wrestling program. I got recruited, and I decided to make the transition back out to the Pacific Northwest. I went and wrestled for 1 year at the university, Pacific University. And at that time, there was a lot of talk within the IOC, United States Olympic Committee, USA Wrestling, that women's wrestling is going to be granted acceptance into the Olympics. So I was out at Pacific University from 2001 until 2002. 2002, they announced that women's wrestling was going to be in the Olympics. So they opened up the Olympic Training Center as a resident program, and they started recruiting athletes. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the first wave of recruitments of recruits that got residency at the Olympic Training Center. And that's really what catapulted my athletic career, because up until that point, I was a college student. I think that's being generous. I attended classes. I wasn't absorbing the material, and I was wrestling, and I loved it. So when I got the opportunity to go to the Olympic Training Center within 1 year, I became a national champion, and I took third at the World Championships.
So, Sally, what now, as I understand it, when it came to the Olympic team, I mean, you were an Olympian. I guess you have to be an Olympian to be at the training center, but you end up being an alternate. Explain to us what that means.
Yes. So from 2000 to all the way up until 2008, I was a full-time resident at the Olympic Training Center. In the sport of wrestling, only the number one person, you have to win Olympic trials to make the Olympic team and go represent your country as an Olympian. I took second. So by virtue of taking second, I was the alternate. I went over to China. I sat in the cheap seats and I cheered on the gal that ended up making the team. And that was the way that my life journey worked out. But the interesting thing is that, you know, in sport and in life, we can hear this term of failing. And it really is up to us to make that determination of what failing means. And so I had to turn that whole notion on its head and say I had to fail forward. And I looked at that and said, you know, maybe I didn't make the Olympic team, but I'm going to have some more opportunities now that are going to be open to me, because I don't have the same obligations for training and for a lifestyle. And that's actually how I started my military career. I came home from the Beijing Olympics. I was the alternate. I was really salty and sassy. And really, I fell into a depression because of it, because I couldn't look at the glass being half full. I saw it still half empty. So I went to the local Army recruiter's office, and I said, I want the most difficult, challenging job any female can have coming in right off the street. And they said, well, you're in luck. We have a job for you.
Never, never tell that to a recruiter, Sally.
Yes. So I sat in the recruiter's office, and we were going through some different scenarios of what could be. And they said, well, here's two options right away that are available to you. You could either go psychological operations or civil affairs. But both of those are going to be a little bit more demanding. You're going to have to pass a fitness test. Hopefully you're smart, because you're going to have to get certain GT scores. And I thought, oh, you know, if you just give me the material, I'll go home and I'll study for it and I'll just see how good I can do, because I didn't have that much faith that I was really that good of an athlete because I didn't make the Olympic team. So when I went back and I had to do these like selection tests and I had to take these mental aptitude tests, I ended up just going off the charts. And so when I went to basic training, I didn't tell anyone that I was an Olympic alternate because I felt like I was the biggest failure. I couldn't actually tell anyone that I was even an athlete. But what happened was that I ended up gaining about 16 pounds in basic training because I didn't realize how much of an athlete I was and how much I loved working out and how much of that was a part of my daily routine. So finally, I went up and I got in so much trouble. I went up to the drill sergeant and said, excuse me, Mr. Drill Sergeant, can we please do some physical activity today? Because we've been like cleaning our guns for so long that I'm starting to go a little crazy.
Sally, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about your military career as a member of the Army Special Operations. Folks, this is Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by world-class wrestler Sally Roberts. We'll be right back. Radio, ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're very pleased and fortunate to be joined today by Sally Roberts. Sally is a world-class wrestling champion. She was also a member of our Army's Special Forces. Sally, we're talking a little bit about your move from Olympian to Army. Now, your bio lists you as a member of the Army Special Operations. That covers a lot of ground. What can you tell us about what your role was there with the Army?
Yeah. So the role that I had specifically was that I was part of PSYOP. I got when I enlisted, I went PSYOP. I went to a unit that trained me up for that particular job, that discipline. I got an opportunity to deploy to combat. They were looking for some volunteers. I raised my hand and said, yeah, I'd like to do that. And when I went over to Afghanistan, that was the work that we were doing was PSYOP. However, I got tasked out on a few different jobs. My aptitude, I ended up having an undergraduate degree. I decided to not go officer because I wanted to be in the military as quickly as possible. So I didn't want to go to officer candidate school. And I had some really good physical prowess. So I would get tasked out on a lot of different jobs and supporting a lot of different entities just because of my mental capacity and my physical abilities.
So, Sally, one thing that, and I'm guessing this might have put you on the next path that you move to in life. You volunteered. You're in Afghanistan. We're talking about a country where little girls are not afforded many rights or even dignity. What was their reaction to seeing a female soldier?
It was incredible. When I would be out walking around the countryside, the little girls would come up to me, and the thing that they would do in Afghanistan is they would touch their thumbs. So until they went through puberty, the girls were able to run around, and they would look like little American girls in a sense, right? Like they were just able to run around quite freely, and they had scraped up knees. But once they went through puberty, they were now clothed, and they didn't have the same opportunities afforded to them at all. And it moved me so deeply to see these little girls that would come up to me and their eyes would just be so bright, and they would look at me with all of my uniform, and I would be the only female that was surrounded by all of my male colleagues, and they would look at me and just be in awe. And I thought, I want to be able to affect their lives in a positive way in the future at some point.
Now, Sally, you said they touch their thumbs. I don't get that.
Yes. So as I was walking, there was about 10 of us. I was the female that was with the group, and then I had my 9 male colleagues, and we would be walking along the countryside, and the little girls would be so delighted to see a female soldier that they would literally run up to me, and instead of getting a high five, they would touch their thumb to my thumb, and that was the way that they acknowledged.
Okay, so that was kind of like their high five or their thumbs up sign in that culture.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm guessing at some point you're seeing these little girls in Afghanistan, And does your head at some point transition to, wait a minute, I've got plenty of little girls back in the good old U.S. of A. who could use some inspiration as well? And is that how Wrestle Like a Girl came to be?
That was where the concept got created. When I was in Afghanistan, saying, yes, I can affect the lives of girls all over the world, but I don't have to be in Afghanistan to do that. I can do that work back in the United States.
Now, and I'll tell you, so you founded Wrestle Like a Girl, and folks can find out more, wrestlelikeagirl.org, in 2016 to reinforce the fact that girls can do anything and highlight that fact through the sport of wrestling. Now, Sally, forgive me, I know two things about wrestling. One was when my high school friends were chowing down on X-Lax in order to make weight before the next match. And the fact that it's a sport I never, I mean never, had an interest in joining. So what is it about wrestling for you that helps develop strong, I mean not literally, but figuratively and psychologically strong women?
Wrestling is this incredible sport that teaches you how to own your space, to own your voice, and to own your body. You have to be in charge of you, and it teaches us leadership skills, because when you're on the wrestling mat, you're training, you're going to get knocked down 1,000 times, you're going to get taken down 1,000 times, and you have to continually get back up. And you have a team, a brotherhood, a sisterhood of teammates that say, we need you in order for our whole team to win. So though it is an individual sport, it also has the complexities of being a team sport when you go into tournaments and when you go into competitions. In my mind, wrestling is a way to develop our next generation of leaders, because it teaches that fight, that tenacity, that grit, some of those same elements that we see and we hear and we know about from our military service. We're able to learn that in a sport.
Yeah, it reminds me of a scene from a film, Mafia, Kevin Costner. It's not important, but the guy's making a speech and he's talking about baseball and how when the batter stands at the plate, that's the time for individual achievement. But when you're in the field, it's teamwork. So I'm glad you explained that, because the way you described the way you got into wrestling, because you didn't play well with others, and now it's interesting that you're sort of flipping that coin on its head and you're spreading it out to teamwork and cooperation and how to be a good leader.
Yes. Absolutely. And the more young individuals that get to participate in the sport of wrestling, they get to learn those life skills in a quote-unquote safe space. I mean, the wrestling room is a safe space. There's padded walls. There's a wrestling mat. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to be able to learn those skills in that safe space before you have to really go and engage them in the outside world.
Now, Sally, in looking at some of the videos that you've got up at wrestlelikeagirl.org, it's interesting, you're sitting there speaking to a group of young women, maybe young women and young men, I couldn't tell from the video, but you say when, but then you say when, for you, when is what's important now. Explain that concept to our listeners.
As we go through our days, if we try and take the whole day in at once, it can be overwhelming depending on how many tasks that we have to deal with. So the acronym that we use in sport and performance psychology, which is what we teach the athletes that come to our camps, is when. What's important now? When we wake up in the morning, the most important thing that we have to do is get out of bed, put on our shoes, brush our teeth, and make sure that our bags are packed so that we can leave for the door. Once we cross the threshold, everything that we have just left behind needs to stay there. Our attention needs to focus on the moment of where we're going to. For the kids, it's going to be the classroom, and for the adults, it's going to be work, and for our soldiers, it's going to be their place of duty. And once we get to our place of duty, what's important now? It's focusing on our deadlines and our tasks at hand. And once that comes to a conclusion, once we cross the threshold, we go on to that next thing. What's important now? For the athletes, it's being in the wrestling room and it's being present and whatever challenges that they may have experienced from their place of duty or school or whatever it is they did or did not do in the morning to prepare for their day, none of that matters anymore. They have to give their undivided attention to the current task at hand, which is being present in the wrestling room and learning those skills. And when we teach these young kids, as we're helping to develop them, what's important now, it helps them to reframe their thoughts so that they're not going through a wrestling practice thinking about a test that they failed, and they don't become adults sitting in a business meeting thinking, I forgot to, am I wearing the right kind of shoes? They're able to focus quite diligently on the current task at hand.
Wow, Sally, that's great. Now, I'll tell you, even though you're probably the lowest energy guest I've ever had on American Warrior Radio, Forget that. Forget I said that. That's not true. But that's what's part of my hope is not just your inspiration, but the lessons that you can share with all of us, children or adult out here. What is the average age of your participants in the Wrestle Like a Girl organization?
5 to 18.
Wow. That's a pretty broad scope.
It is, and we break them up into two groups, the beginners and the advanced, but what's really important is that we have role modeling that occurs. The young athletes that aren't as skilled and aren't as developed, they get to see what right looks like by watching the older athletes. The older athletes know that they have to be aware of modeling that good behavior because those young eyes are looking at them.
Sally, we're going to take another break here. When we come back, I want to talk about, I mean, clearly wrestling is a physical sport. You have to be strong. You have to be agile. But you hold two psychology degrees, both a bachelor's and a master's. And I want to talk a little bit about the role that mindset plays, whether one is on the wrestling mat or out there in life, and the lessons that can be taken from not only winning, but also from losing. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I'm joined by Sally Roberts, a member of our Army Special Forces Operations, a world-class wrestler, and a lot of great stuff she's sharing with us here today. We'll be right back. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. It's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. You know, you just heard that ad. If you would like your very own customized branded American Warrior Radio bottle breacher, check out patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio, patreon.com. For about a cup of coffee a month, you can help us spread these important messages around the country, around the globe, frankly, and get your own bottle breacher in return for that. We're talking to Sally Roberts. She is a world-class wrestler. She's also a former member of the Army Special Forces PSYOPs. Sally, before we took the break, I was talking a little bit about when I go through your website and look at your bio, there's wrestling, but wrestling seems more like the vehicle to a much broader goal. And that's some of the messages that you spread as a member of the Bravo 748 Speakers Bureau out there, talking about adversity and challenges and how, you know, wrestling teaches you that a setback is not necessarily the end of the path, right?
That's right. In sport, in life, in many things, we're not always going to win. We're going to lose more times than we succeed. And how we're able to bounce back from those challenges, those hardships, those defeats, they're actually going to open the doors towards even bigger and better victories going forward.
Well, I tell you, Sally, that jumped out of me because, you know, when I get 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 potential American Warrior advertisers in a row who turn me down, it doesn't feel like it's the next step here. So help me out here. What sort of, when we're talking about mindset and perspective, when that happens in life, what should you be telling yourself when you're picking yourself back up?
It's important that you have a growth mindset. That means that when challenge, when hardship, when things happen that we don't want, we're able to look at that and reframe it in our brains, in our minds, for a positive. Okay, so someone didn't want to support this particular my radio show, but that's okay. That says more about them than about me. I'm going to go and knock on the next door, the next door, the next door, because I'm going to find someone that's going to be a better fit. And as athletes and as soldiers, we have to really be able to embrace that and go towards life knowing that there's going to be opportunities, there's going to be more doors that are going to be open, and knowing that just because one door closes doesn't mean that there aren't going to be 1,000 more doors that open. We have to open our minds and open our hearts towards the greater possibilities.
Yeah, Sally, it's interesting. In your materials, you talk about the importance of perspective relative to failure. And not but a few minutes ago, you actually said, I didn't think I was a very good athlete. And me and the guys through the glass here in the operations studio are all looking at each other, shaking our heads like, wait a minute, you were athlete, you know, Olympic level. How do you even get that perspective that you weren't a very good athlete?
Yes, because...
And I just really understand about how important perspective is. Like, yeah, and you put your finger on it. If it's radio sales or you know, I might be having a bad day, You know, I was trying to sell myself, well, you know what, I'm not in Afghanistan. Perspective.
Right. Right. And the truth is that perspective is trained. So when I was having those negative thoughts and I was having a closed mindset, I, at that point, hadn't embraced and I hadn't got my master's in sport and performance psychology. So I didn't understand the importance of having a positive mindset, having a growth mindset. At that point, I thought that I was a failure. I learned sport and performance psychology in tandem while I was wrestling for the Army's World Class Athlete Program. And that is what helped me understand how important it is to be positive, forward-thinking, and open-minded.
Touch on the notion, if you would, for Sally, of falling forward. I don't think I've ever heard that phrase before. I mean, obviously, I've heard falling forward before, but when it comes to success and failure.
In sport, in life, we're not always going to succeed. We're going to fail. And as long as we're able to fail, but going forward so that we can learn something from that, then that's going to be the way that we can benefit. And we can look at any opportunity. We either won or we learned something. And what is it that we learned? And if we can come through any of those challenges, any of those hardships and say, I learned something really great and it's going to make me better, that's going to be the most important thing because it's not the destination, it's the journey. And as we learn along the way, then we've never really lost, we've never really failed. We've only enhanced our abilities to understand things more complex than we ever thought.
How much of what you're teaching now are elements that you derived not just from the sport of wrestling, but also from your military service and I mean, areas where they crossed over, where they combined, where they led you down a new thought path, if you will?
Nearly all of it.
Wow.
One of the most important things I ever did with my life was become a soldier, representing my country.
Okay. What now, one thing, again, my experience with wrestling is extremely limited, but I've worked and volunteered with a number of organizations where we work with young ladies and helping them. You know, I cited the numbers at the beginning of the show about the number of women in the military, and that doesn't directly translate to the rest of our society, but clearly there's still challenges that young women may face out there that you know, boys don't necessarily, one of which is confidence. And I'm guessing when you're standing there on the mat looking at your opponent across the mat and you're locking eyes with them, it's pretty damn important to begin that PsyOps game, to exude confidence. What sorts of things are you doing through your program to help these young girls gain that confidence that they can transfer from the mat out there to school or to life or to jobs or creative ventures, whatever it might be?
One of the most important things is that we teach them that body posture is everything. If you're going to walk out onto a wrestling mat and your opponent's already out there, or they're going to come out and meet you at the same time, you have to walk with your head up and your shoulders back, exuding confidence, because I've wanted to wrestle 1,000 people that had more poor body posture because, oh my gosh, they don't look confident. I already know they've already been beaten before they step on the mat. And the girls need to learn that. They need to learn that their posture, the way that they carry themselves, it's important in wrestling. It's going to be important in the business world. It's going to be important if they're soldiers. The other thing that we teach them is that the way that they speak, their tone of voice, they have to be direct. They have to be concise. They have to be able to speak with intention, because when they do that, they are heard from the other side. And in addition to building confidence, one of the most important things is they have to believe it. And, you know, there's that notion, fake it till you make it, but really it's fake it until you become it. My husband is a special forces soldier, and we would always joke that all of his colleagues would say, I want the most beautiful, pristine wife, but I want my daughter to be a true killer. Well, that means they have to get educated and they have to get taught. So one of the things that we do is self-defense. And one of the hardest things that we have to do is for the first 5 minutes is getting the girls to be loud enough so that if they're getting someone's trying to abduct them, they say, stop, get away from me, I don't know you. They have to say it loud enough so it can actually cause alarm by people in the area. And the girls, more often or not, taught to be seen and not heard. But we're trying to flip that on its head and say, you need to be heard and you need to be seen.
I tell you, one of the videos on your website, wrestlelikeagirl.org, was there were some, you're talking to some of the girls who had been through or were in the process of going through the program, And I didn't see a before and after sort of a thing, but just looking at these young faces and their grins and their pride and hearing from their parents about what a difference this has made. I don't want to say wrestling's a simple thing, but to actually jump in and go out there and do it, and then it's like, oh, yes, I can. So I've knocked down that barrier. What's the next door I'm going to kick in?
Absolutely. Wrestling, sport, it's a gateway to leadership. And once they recognize that they can control this thing that's incredibly hard, but it's not the thing that's hard, it's themselves. They can control this themselves in this space that's challenging. The doors, the opportunities, the options are limitless.
Do you find, Sally, at that age, you know, particularly as they're getting into the teen years, that this concept for so many young women about being in control of yourself, that no matter how bad things are or what place you're in, that's the one thing that you do control, your actions, your thoughts, your decisions on which way to go, good or bad. Is that a real, a regular issue, do you think, as you're seeing with these young ladies? And I'm just wondering, going back to your early time in your young life, if you look back and say, oh, aha, now I know what the old, you know, the young Sally Roberts was thinking.
Absolutely. We need strong role models. We need strong supporters. We need strong mentors, because that's going to be able to show these girls what it is that they're capable of before they actually know. They can say, oh, I see Serena Williams. Oh, I see this soldier doing this. I see, they're able to come up and formulate in their heads what it is that they can become before they even thought it was possible. An astronaut, a soldier, a general, a doctor.
Yeah, a member of the Special Forces. One thing I loved, you used a phrase, and I'm guessing you probably didn't coin this phrase, Sally, but I love it, and I think it applies to a lot of things in life. Bloom where you're planted. Where did that come from? Do you know?
Yes, bloom where you're planted. There is an incredible man that I've had the opportunity to work alongside in some different projects. His name's John Bartis. He was the former Assistant Secretary to Health and Human Services, but throughout his journey, he wrestled at one point. And when I was in Washington, D.C., and he was working for the administration, I went and had a meeting in his office, and he said, you know, Sally, you're really embodying the notion, bloom where you're planted. And I looked at him and said, yes, I am. And I've never heard it before, but I love it, and I use it on a regular basis because it conveys the thoughts and the ideology of wherever you're at and whatever it is that you're doing, do that to your fullest and share that gift with other people.
Sally, these are great lessons, not just for young ladies and young women, but do you allow young men into your program as well?
We do. In fact, we've started Bring Your Brothers to Practice Day, because what's been happening is the boys are going to wrestling practice and the girls are going to gymnastics or swimming or something else, and the parents are getting spread so thin. Well, you can bring both kids, a boy and a girl, to the same practice. It's going to reduce your travel time. It's going to put them both in a safe space where they can learn these skills, and we can all go together.
Now, when you've got them out there wrestling, assuming you're matching up relative size and weight and maybe age, I kind of chuckled when you talked about your early wrestling career and that you were a girl wrestling on the boys' team, and it didn't take very long before they went from, my opponent is a woman or a girl, to, oh, yikes, I hope I don't get Sally. My opponent is a real tough, aggressive wrestler. Do you mix do boys wrestle girls and girls wrestle boys in your program?
They do. Right now, we don't have the numbers to segregate on gender. Girls prefer wrestling girls, and in practice, there is going to be intermixed genders. When it comes to competition, we advocate and we support girls wrestling girls, boys wrestling boys. However, right now, there's only 12 states in the United States that have a girls high school division or high school state championship. That means the other states, there's going to be mixed competition, mixed genders. But in our programs for Wrestle Like a Girl, we're all going to practice and we're all going to train together. And when it goes to competing, then we're going to go and let them decide where it fits best according to their comfort and their opportunities available.
Sally, I should never assume, but, you know, the girls can do anything. At some point, though, there are definite physical differences between men and women. But at the early age on the wrestling mat, is that not as apparent? And I guess it's kind of a back around the barn way of asking, if Sally were, you know, king, and would all the programs in high schools be co-ed programs versus a male wrestling team and a female wrestling team? Or
what we're finding is this: when states, when schools offer the opportunity for girls to be able to wrestle other girls by creating a girls team, their participation numbers are going up exponentially. Girls prefer wrestling other girls. For the states that don't have that, the girls are, for lack of a better term, that's the opportunity is for them to wrestle boys. We're seeing girls coming out. They're still wrestling. They're still participating. But the numbers are increasing exponentially when they get to wrestle other girls. And that's one of the things that my organization, Wrestle Like a Girl, does, is we're working with every state that does not have a girls high school division or high school state championship. And we're working to create the opportunities for girls to wrestle other girls, because the participation increases. And when participation increases, they're going to be more likely to graduate from high school. We're increasing their educational, social, and financial mobility.
Sally, I always try and think of myself as a life learner. And I tell you, just talking to you and getting prepared for the show, there's a lot of stuff that all of our listeners can benefit from. When we come back, I'd like to talk about living elite and how all of us can do that. Folks, as your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, I'm joined by Sally Roberts, just one of the great speakers you can find at Bravo748.com. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Sally Roberts' life started off a little bit rocky, but through the sport of wrestling and a brief term with our Army and the Special Operations and PsyOps, she learned to bloom where she was planted, and she's doing very well. She's paying that forward now with an organization called Wrestle Like a Girl. You can find out more at wrestlelikeagirl.org. And we're talking about life lessons that all of us can learn with Sally. Sally, I sort of teased before the break, when you look at some of the topics that you can speak on, you use the phrase living elite, which I love, by the way. Kind of walk us through that. How can all of us live elite, whether I'm a 12-year-old girl trying to decide to build my confidence by going into wrestling, or if I'm a 57-year-old radio host who wants to expand to the Colorado Springs market?
Living elite encompasses this mindset that whatever we're going to do, we're going to do it to the best of our abilities. One of the most important pieces of wisdom I'd ever received in my life was actually when I was deployed to Afghanistan. My path crossed with a Navy chief, and I said, if there's one piece of wisdom that you can impart upon me, what would it be? And he looked at me square in the eye and said, when given an opportunity between two choices, always choose the harder thing. Because even if you don't succeed, you will have grown from that experience. And that's something that I embody, and that's something that I talk about when we're looking at living our most elite life and being the best that we can do, like being the best that we can be. Honoring that, when given choices, do the hard choice. Make the hard rights instead of the easy wrongs. And embracing what it means for us to really own our constitutions and stand in our own space and own our own voice.
Now, Sally, I know normally folks would have to pay to get this kind of advice from you. You are a professional, but I guess for most of us, we've not been, you know, 99% of us never served in the military, much less went to Afghanistan. Probably even fewer of us ever rose to the level of an Olympic class athlete. I mean, you were kind of teasing about only winning one match in your wrestling, you know, career. That describes my high school tennis record. How is it training? Is it psychology? Is it affirmations? How can the rest of us get ourselves into that living elite mindset? I mean, are there a few basic things you can tell us, or is it just we need to prepare, read, and just, I don't know. You tell me. You're the expert.
The elite athlete mindset is believing in yourself and pushing yourself past your limits. So many times we quit when we get to the finish line, but not recognizing that we actually have so much more we can give. For instance, when I was training for the Olympics, we would have to run 10 sprints at the end of practice. And I remember telling myself, oh my gosh, I'm so glad it was only 10 sprints, because if I had to run one more, I would have died. And I stopped myself right there and said, nope, I have to prove to myself that I'm not going to die. I'm going to run one more sprint. And I take that same ideology and that same ethos with me into life, where I say, I'm so glad I don't have to read one more page of this book. And the next thing you know, I'm forcing myself to read one more page. And what it's taught me is that the mind, the body, the spirit can take on and it can own so much more than we give it credit for. And we can, and when we really trust ourselves and we really start to embrace that, people are going to say, instead of saying, I can't believe you do so much, they're going to say, tell me how it is you can do so much, because our capacity for work is exponential.
Hmm. Speaking of exponential, do you see, or is part of your goal with Wrestle Like a Girl, that one young lady comes through and learns and builds the confidence and really embraces the idea that girls can do anything, and she tells another girl who tells another girl, and basically that exponential growth of this mindset throughout our country?
94% of female C-suite CEOs, chief operating officers, have played a sport. These girls that we're teaching the sport of wrestling, they're going to be able to own their space and own their voice. They're not only going to go and tell their peers what it is that they can do and the opportunities, but they're going to be able to take all of those skills and apply them to high school, apply them to college, apply them to the military, apply them to the boardroom, and they are going to be solid leaders because of it.
I tell you, my baseball career was much more successful than my tennis career, and it made me think as you're talking there, one of the things, the first things the coaches taught us was you don't run to first base, you run through first base. Your sprint is not over until you pass the base, rather than, you know, pulling up before you get to the base. And that struck me as something that kind of along the lines of what you're saying. How much of this, you were a member of the Army's Elite World Class Athlete Program. I didn't know such a thing existed. As tell us about that. Was that you joined the Army and they said, holy cow, you're a tremendous athlete, we want to put you into this program? Or was that part of the conversation with the recruiter when he found out that you were an Olympic level wrestler?
No one knew about it. Because of the way that I had enlisted into the military, I volunteered for deployment. I found myself over in Afghanistan. When I was over there, that's when I started to realize, you know, maybe I really wasn't so bad at this wrestling thing. And I started to put the wheels in motion and have some conversations with a couple of generals to say, if I wanted to go back and wrestle, what would that look like? I had to get a letter of recommendation from a two-star on the general officer when I was over in Afghanistan. I called back over to the Army's World Class Athlete Program, because actually within the wrestling world, everyone knows about the World Class Athlete Program. It's incredibly hard to get in, but most, if you're coming from the civilian world, you do a direct recruit right into that program, because that's the easiest way to get on the team. I completely bypassed it because I thought I had retired, and I only then came back. So when I reached back out to the Army's World Class Athlete Program leadership and said, hi, my name is Sally, I'd like to come and wrestle for you, and they said, well, you're going to have to join the Army. And I said, well, you're in luck. I'm actually in Afghanistan right now. No one knew about it. So once my packet got finished, I sent it over. In order to actually get into that program, you have to be top three in the country. And I was fortunate enough to have qualified and met the credentials so that I could participate and join the ranks of the Elite World Class Athlete Program.
Amazing stuff. I tell you, Sally, you're inspiring me right now, even as we speak, and I'm betting a lot of our listeners out there as well. Real quick, we've got just a couple minutes left. Two things. You've got a campaign to get folks to get the women's NCAA wrestling recognized and going. What can folks do to help out with that?
Yes, right now we have our campaign. It's called Wrestle the Gap, and we're highlighting that there is one Division I women's program in all of the NCAA. So what we need is for more people to go on to our website, wrestlelikeagirl.org, do two things. Sign the petition, because we're going to be submitting that to the members of the NCAA Committee for Women's Athletics April 26th, when we get to have an audience with them. And the second thing is, if you see a Division I school on there that is your alma mater or a school that you love, please send them a letter saying, we would like for you to consider adding women's wrestling as a sport, so that these girls from high school have the opportunity to go and participate, whether in college for that team, for that sport, for the sport of wrestling.
I tell you, Sally, what you're offering is just great stuff. Do you have a physical location? I mean, is there a building in Colorado Springs or someplace around the country? Or is this the kind of program where if I want to get this available to some of the young ladies in my community, wherever I may be listening, you bring the program to them?
Absolutely. We bring the program to you. We just relocated to Washington, D.C., and our camp system are set up across the U.S. where people reach out and say, we'd like to know about a camp. We coordinate that with our logistics person. We set up the camp, we open it up, and we're able to give 100 girls access to being able to come. And we're always needing sponsors and supporters to help us champion the cause.
Sally, what any last thoughts or quick words for our listeners? Obviously, I want to encourage them to go to wrestlelikeagirl.org. They'll learn lots there. But what other lessons can you share with our listeners here?
One of the things that the military taught me, and it's something that I've learned from sport, is that united we all rise. And it's not men's wrestling versus women's wrestling, it's wrestling. And it's not Republican versus Democrat, it's all of the United States. And the more that we can come together and band together through sports, through opportunities, it's going to make it so that our nation is stronger, we're a stronger people because of that, and it's really going to help move the ball down the field in so many more aspects.
Sally, thank you so much and congratulations on your success and what you continue to do for our communities and particularly the young women out there and in some cases young men out there in our communities. Again, folks can learn more if they go to wrestlelikeagirl.org. Lots of great videos there, lots of great information. Check it out and support. Thanks to Jamie and the folks at Bravo 748 Speakers Bureau. If you're looking for a speaker for a corporate or other event, check out the amazing folks at Bravo 748. Lots of folks just like Sally at bravo748.com. Find us, AmericanWarriorRadio.com. All the podcasts, over 180 shows, can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, this has been your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. All policies and procedures are to remain in place.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.